way. All right, well, oh, you sounded good. I'm going to start. I need 7 volunteers that can help me out as this class goes forward. Can I have 7 volunteers? Okay.
Sure.
All right, I would like you to read John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31 when we get there. Is it Esther? Okay, Esther. Sorry, I gave you the wrong verse. I want you to read John 15:5. Esther, I want you to read John 14:6. Who else? Okay. John 11:25. 10:11. 10:9. And 2 more. 8:12. And 1 more. This is all John, by the way. Okay, and it'll be 6:35. All right. Thank you all for letting me come to speak today. I'm very grateful for this opportunity. Before we get started, I want to ask you, does anyone in this room know who Douglas Adams is? No one knows who Douglas Adams is. Okay, Douglas Adams is... he's not alive anymore. He was big in the 1960s in Great Britain, and mostly did a lot of stuff with the BBC. But eventually, his work was comedy, and it was a little slapstick silly, and it was so popular that they were developed into books, known as The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah. And I want to bring this up because if you're not familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it is a very silly book about a human who is saved by his friend, who happens to be an alien, at the last moment the Earth is going to be destroyed. And it's kind of like him learning about what life is like beyond Earth. And how that they were saved is they were saved by this ship whose purpose was to find this computer called Deep Thought. Deep Thought was built for the purpose of answering the question. And by the question, I mean, what is the answer to life, the universe, and everything in it? And so the computer says, when they built the computer says, I'll have to think about that question only 10 million years. So they're like, okay, well, 10 million years go by, they go back, and they tell the computer, they ask the computer, do you have an answer for us? And the computer says, yes, I do, but you're not going to like it. It says, it doesn't matter, we have to know, this is the most puzzling question in all of existence, please tell us the answer. And so the computer says, well, the answer to life, the universe, and everything in it is... No, 42. Such a silly answer, right? 42, and so they'd like wasted 10 million years to get the answer to 42. And the computer says, well, the problem was you were not asking the right question. And they said, what is the right question? And they're like, well, I can't tell you that. You're going to have to build another computer. And that computer is going to take another 10 million years. And if you read the story, that computer ended up being Earth. And they destroyed it right before the answer came out. But I bring this up because whether or not the book is silly, it is a question that I think almost everyone here has probably thought about at one point. Would you say that's fair? What is the meaning to life, the universe, and everything in it? Or maybe just something simpler. We'll simplify the questions. Who are you? Who are you? Who can tell me who they are? Anyone? See, I like feedback, so... Yeah, Bonnie. You're a child of God? Okay, that's a good answer.
An old philosopher's answer. I think, therefore I exist.
Okay, which separates us from other animals, other life. Okay, anyone else? So, I want you to keep in mind, who 42 is not the answer. Or why are you here? What's your purpose? It's such a simple sentence, isn't it? Isn't it? Who am I? It's three words, but philosophers, kings, important people, non-important people have thought about this question for ages and have tried to figure out the answer. And there's so many different ways to answer it. For example, I got a riddle for you. What do you have that's only yours that everyone else uses more than you? Your name. So, by definition, I am my name. I am John Paul. But that's not even a good enough answer, because when we were talking earlier, I said I also go by JP. But I definitely do not go by John. So I'm not John, but I'm John Paul. But yeah, you know my name, but that really doesn't tell me a lot about me, right? No. And so I could tell you that I love board games. And I would like to crush you in a board game. I can also be very competitive as well. And you remember, there's people over here too, so I'm going to look at you guys as well. I could tell you I have brown hair. I have brown eyes. I'm about 5'9". I weigh, well, let's not talk about that one. Those are my physical characteristics that also define who I am. I am a teacher. I am a husband. I am a father. But more importantly, out of all of these, and what Bonnie hinted on almost right away, is I am a Christian. And out of everything else, nothing else really matters except that one statement, I am a Christian. I know that someday I'm not going to win a Nobel Prize. I know that history is probably going to forget me once I'm gone. But I also know that my loved ones are going to remember me. And they will remember me probably the most because of that one statement. And it's what we've been doing for the last 2,000 years. Since Jesus first died on the cross, He created this institution that we have today as being a family and a part of the church. That no matter where we go in the world, whether it be Tanzania, Italy, Idaho, or China, that we can get together as family and be part of this Christian church. So when we look at the Bible, one of the most important people, Jesus, tells us who He is. And He does it through these very, very simple statements. I am. Now, I write with the left hand. It's fine. And the statement is so simple and so profound that when we sing about it, we call it the Great I Am. So we're going to look at these I Am statements. John is a very great book. It's often one of the books I first start with when I teach someone the gospel, because the message is very simple, it's very straightforward, and you really get to understand who Jesus is. As far as the Gospels are concerned, it's not part of what's called the Synoptic Gospels, meaning it's different from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But that's because John, when he writes at the very end of his Gospel, he wrote in chapter 20, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But they are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. So we see that He chose to write this way because His main focus was so that you may believe and understand who Jesus is. John loves the number seven. We kind of think of seven as a powerful number in Christianity. Maybe I think that goes all the way back to Genesis, where there are 7 days in the week. We see that there's perfect unity in seven. We can also say the same thing about 12 and 3. And so John uses this theme of seven all throughout his book. He doesn't have seven chapters, but he has seven discourses. He has seven miracles. And if you study those miracles, if I come again, we're going to do a study on those miracles, because it's a great study. And he has these seven I am statements. And so we're going to look at who Jesus is today through his I am statements. And let's start with the first one. Who had 15:5?
I did.
Okay.
I am the vine, you are the branches. A man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing.
Can you guys over there see? Okay, good. Alright, so here we see Jesus is the vine and the branches. You guys, I know a lot of you are farmers. Do any of you grow grapes? You grow grapes? Alright, how do you grow grapes? Okay. Yeah, they're very structured. You have to support them. And they are all supported by one branch. Right? So when we look at this in the context of who Jesus is saying that he is our support. He's saying that you are all, as Christians, you are all a part of me. And so you are all attaching yourself to me just like all the other Christians are doing. And that is what makes you family. We see that we have purpose here. And that is to be a part of him. And once we have accepted him, and we do things in his name, then we can only truly progress through him. Make progress through him. Any thoughts on that? Yeah, please talk to me. Bonnie, you look like you have a thought.
Oh, I'm writing down what you said.
Okay.
It is intriguing. I've never thought about the whole line metaphor that it is.
I didn't even realize. Yes?
If you cut the branch, that part of the because it's no longer no longer has this
But I think that's a good point as well. And this is not, I'm not someone who's that familiar with how grapevines work, so If that's true, that would be a perfect analogy, because it would be like cutting ourselves off from Christ, and we are essentially dead in our sins, right? Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. Let's move on to the next one, verse 6. Or part number 6, not verse 6. 4:6. 14:6. Who had 14:6? Yes, go ahead.
Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
Okay, so who knows what's happening in this story right now when Jesus makes this claim? Sorry? Not so much the meaning, but what's... What, in the larger story, in this part, what's going on? In the gospel narrative, what is happening right now? He's at the Last Supper. Talking to his disciples. So here, if you go back to the beginning of this section, we see that Jesus is leading up to this point. And he starts with washing their feet. Have any of you ever had your feet washed before? I have. It's a very humbling experience. And who was supposed to wash the feet? Yeah, the servants, or if there was no servants, the master of the house. And if the master of the house was not there, the lowest person at the table. Who's the only one who should not have been washing the feet? Jesus is the only one that should not have been washing the feet. So see, he's leading here by example. And so then he goes on to predict Peter's... You guys remember what he predicts about Peter? He's going to betray him, or deny him. And then he goes on to... Oh, sorry, he predicts his own betrayal. I left that part out. And then he predicts Peter's betrayal. And then he's like, all this is going to happen. And this is going to be a terrible night for you. But I'm going to lead by example, and I'm going to show you that it's going to be okay. I'm going to show you. That's what this statement is about to them, is it's going to be okay because I know what's going to happen. And you need to follow me. You need to trust in me. So when he's saying, that way, he's the way, also saying that you need to trust in him. Thoughts or comments?
Well, Thomas has just said, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way?
But he tells them. He says,
and you've got to follow up in a minute. His father, the Lord just shows the Father. Good old Thomas.
Can't go to the Father except through me. And I think this is important with the last one. The last one, I think, which is actually the first one, is where I think all this comes back to. Well, I started with the last one. I think they all connect, but I think they all connect to the first one, which is why I'm doing them in backwards. If you haven't noticed, I'm doing them in backwards order. Okay? Especially against the theory survival of the fittest.
Yeah,
very much so. Mm-hmm. Do any of you here know who? Yes. I'm sorry, you'll have to remind me your name?
Jamie.
Okay. So Jamie has an excellent point right there. Everybody listen to Jamie. Alright. Do you guys know who Robert Greenleaf is? Sorry? No, Robert Greenleaf. Now, Robert Greenleaf is a person who came up with a leadership theory that is called servant leadership.
Oh, okay.
Yet most of you are probably familiar with servant leadership because it's the example by which we lead by. It's not a new concept, especially to us, because we've been following it for 2,000 years. But he basically says, he goes to corporations and he tells people that if you want to have good company service, if you want people to be part of who you are, then you need to serve from the top. And that's what Jesus shows here, is that we serve from the top. Okay. 11:25. I have to speed up or we're not going to finish.
Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, shall live."
This is one of my favorites because when we hear this, what do we think of? If you're like me, you're all thinking of the exact same thing. John 3:16. We're all thinking of where he says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life." John 17, because I'm getting too excited. I need to slow down. Because God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save it through him. So when Jesus has this conversation, he has this conversation in secret with a man who was a Pharisee. I mean, he was a Pharisee, but he was obviously one that was looking for truth, like they should have been looking for truth. And so here we're really seeing that he tells his disciples that he is new life. Or in Corinthians, when you're in God, you are new. You are a new. In Corinthians, that's why I tried to say the same thing at the same time. If you are in God, you are a new creation. The old is gone. The new has come. Here we learn that, most importantly, that there is life after death. That life is eternal. It's everlasting. Jesus paid the price for us to have everlasting life. And the only way that we can have everlasting life is through Jesus. Amen. Comments on this section. I think this is probably the most straightforward one. Because it's all one that we understand the best. Maybe they didn't understand it. We have hindsight. Number 4. I am the good shepherd. John 10:11.
I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for
sheep. Okay. So, farmers in here. I know there are farmers. How many people raise sheep? I don't know about goats, but I do know a little bit about... What do we know about sheep? Let me ask that question. They're defenseless.
They're dumb.
They follow.
They get into a lot of trouble.
They do get in a lot of trouble. Yes, they have to have a leader. Do you feel like this is a good analogy for the human race? I'm not calling any of you dumb. I remember when I was a kid watching a movie, I think it was Men in Black, where he said that a person is smart, but people together are dumb, deaf, and stupid. Yeah. But here he's illustrating that we need direction, we need guidance, and we especially need a leader. And for them, for these people that are mostly farmers at that time, he's telling them that I am a shepherd. He's telling them something that they would understand. I especially like this one because it's kind of like echoed in creation. We see that there's, he says, I am the good shepherd. This is the word that he uses a lot. It is, God saw it and called it good. So like Jesus, he saw Jesus and called him good. He didn't call him great or amazing. He called him good. I think we try to... I remember a joke. Something like, Man invented refrigerator and called it great. God invented the rabbit and called it good. Man invented the car and called it awesome. God invented the tree and called it good. And car breaks down, refrigerator stops running, but the rabbit and the tree are still going. So maybe we should care more about good than great and awesome. Okay, 5 minutes to go through three parts. John 10:9.
I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved. He will go in and out and find the pasture.
Okay, so here we're seeing, I like how John likes to teach these new Christians also about the Old Testament as well. He's subtly putting parts into the Old Testament. And here, when we think of this, when we hear this passage, we are reminded of the 23rd Psalm. This idea of good pasture, David saying that he will find good pasture. But also here we are seeing another analogy that they would understand. This goes hand in hand with the sheep analogy, but the gate analogy, or even the way analogy. This is another way to show that Jesus is the direction that we need. And so if we want to find the way to good pasture, how do we understand good pasture to be here? What do we understand good pasture to be here?
Truth.
Well, see, I think that's back there, right? Or maybe ultimately heaven? Yeah. So if you want to go to heaven, you have to go through the gate. And it's a very narrow gate, from what we learn later. Number 2, 8:12.
When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life."
Okay, so again we're seeing more sediments echoed in creation. Do you know what three things you need for light to thrive?
Light.
You need the sun, you need light. So that's what he's telling us, you need light. But you also need water, and you also need food. And for us, we need oxygen. So not necessarily, that's why I just said light, that's why I didn't say humans. But there are more complicated issues. But those are the three most basic things that you need for life to thrive. And so, and those are almost the first three things God creates. Light, water, land for food. And so Jesus is telling them, "I am light," as opposed to darkness. Because what do we know about darkness? It's death. It dispels. No, light dispels darkness, not the other way around. But evil hides in the darkness. So it's afraid of the light. Which is why when he talks about it in 1 John later, he's saying that there is no, for those who don't find truth in me, that they are a liar. I'll come to that another time. I was going to write these down as I went on, but I got a little sidetracked, so I'm going to try to cover them really quick. I don't know if you can read my penmanship really well. Okay, Rachel says I have terrible penmanship. And the last one. Okay, so at the beginning of this story, Jesus is talking to them because they came to Jesus to get bread. Okay? And he's talking to them, and he starts talking to them about Moses in the desert. Alright. So, why is he talking to them? Yes. Oh, that was 6:35. So he's talking to them about Moses in the desert. He wants them to, at this point, to be thinking about Moses. And this is extremely important. Because what do we know about Moses? To them, Moses is the most important prophet, right? Maybe next to Elijah. Alright. But Moses also spoke to God. And so what did God say when Moses asked, "Who should I say sent me?" I am who I am. Or he gave what we call the Tetragrammaton. It's Yahweh, Yahweh. Oh, that's a Y, not a Vav. I guess I did it backwards. That's Hebrew. In Hebrew, you do it backwards. Yeah. So he wanted them to be thinking about that I am who I am when he told them this sentence. I am the bread of life. I am the light. I am the gate. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection. I am the way. I am the vine. Because he wanted them to know that when God spoke to the Moses and said, I am who I am, that I am also a part of that I am. Which is why, to me, this is the most important of the seven. Because it sets the tone to really define who Jesus was. And I know I'm out of time, but I'm going to finish with this last point. So when Paul, on the road to Damascus, is blinded, and he says, "Who are you?" Most simply, he says, "I am Jesus. I am the one that you are persecuting." So if you want to know who Jesus is, very simply, I am Jesus. But he is also part of that I am that God spoke to on Moses. Thank you guys for your time today. I appreciate it.